This is the Saddled Stallion podcast, where men are equipped and encouraged to understand their wiring, clarify their mission, and find purpose along the path to its fulfillment. I'm your host, Chad Kanier, and I'm stoked to have you here. Let's roll.
Hey everyone, welcome back to episode 8 of this author interview mini-series where I'm interviewing writer, podcaster, husband, father, and corporate juggernaut Chad Kanier about his new book, Dying in the Wilderness, Finding Purpose Through Failure. Chad, thanks for coming back on.
Very welcome. Not a juggernaut, just a manager at CarMax.
Hey, I gave you my word and... In the last episode, I wasn't gonna, you know, whatever, but it I'm gonna continue to say this. In my eyes, you're a corporate hero.
Everybody needs a guy.
I'll leave it there.
Everybody needs a guy in their corner.
I love it, man. All right, well, I'm gonna spring us right into this chapter. So this chapter is called Suffocated Statues, and I just want to ask you the same question I ask you at the beginning of every one of these episodes. Why did you title this chapter Suffocated Statues, and what's the origin or meaning behind that for you?
Yeah, so in this chapter, I'm talking about the ideas that we come up with, and this can be any idea, but we're primarily talking about an entrepreneurial idea, maybe your business plan, your business concept or whatever. And
yeah,
Suffocated Statues is really like the idea that we want to parade our ideas, we want to be celebrated for our creativity. And so we put them on the mantles of our lives so that everyone can see them. And that means that, you know, if I'm in conversation with this person and like one of the first things he finds a way to route the conversation towards is his idea, like that is him putting it on the mantle. So that's one of the first things I see when I walk into his quote unquote home, which is his mind or like a relationship with him. So I did a lot of that. My wife used to say, you know, you just don't shut up about what you're doing in like business during this season. It's just, it was too important to me. I didn't necessarily always want to be celebrated for my creativity, but I think that was part of the driving force behind it. But just always talking about it and obsessing over it and like clinging to it. And so that's the suffocation piece, is like, it's a statue on your mantle, but you're gripping it so tightly, your idea or your concept, that you actually start to suffocate it, and you're changing its form. You're actually taking away the beauty of that idea, which was not yours originally. It was given to you. And it's really a shame. We're suffocating something that's, you know, by definition, even at inception, it was beautiful. We didn't have to do that. Wow. It's not ours. We don't have to own it. That's the concept of this chapter.
Wow. Dude, that's so good, man. And kind of piggybacking off that, I wanted to ask you, like, there, you talk about this whole thing with your ideas. In this chapter, you mentioned forest. And I was around during that. And I just wanted to ask you, like, what was that? And how did that come about? And what was your, like, take on that in the end?
Oh, what was my take on that? So forest was the idea of bringing athletes, professional athletes, transitioning professional athletes, like they're retiring, in with like small businesses and startups. Because startups really needed, like, they need marketing, they need publicity, they need exposure, and like athletes are just super connected, and they kind of have a natural marketing ability because they look good, they're big, they're around a lot of money. And so it's just a great conduit into a lot of money and a lot of opportunity. But at the same time, they really need to learn business skills if they're going to transition back into the normal world, because the Minnesota Vikings are no longer paying them $540,000 to run around and hit people.
Right.
And, you know, they have back issues and they have all these issues, and they're all overextended on their mortgages and stuff like that. And it's just the chasm that they have to cross to become normal people is really crippling. I mean, no one feels bad for them, because at the end of the day, they played for the Minnesota Vikings and made $550,000. But it really is sad. Like, I got close enough to it and I met enough of these guys. It's really, really sad what they have to go through.
For sure.
But anyway, I mean, it was trying to bridge that gap, and a lot of people thought it was a really cool concept because it helps people on all sides. And then you got to get into like how that works. Like, how do you actually integrate an athlete into a startup, there's not a lot of cash that can be exchanged. So like, then you're talking about
right.
equity, partial ownership in the company. And so we try to broker a lot of these deals. And the only deal we actually successfully did was between Tyrone Crawford, who's a defensive tackle for the Dallas Cowboys, and a small beef jerky company. But by the time we, so this is me answering the second part of your question where it's like, where do I feel, how do I feel about all that now? The only guys I really, really wanted to help were guys who were struggling coming out of the league. Because I wanted to help them become like real professionals and honestly just have an income and to learn and to grow. I didn't want to work with the pros because they are the worst human beings to work with on the planet. And they're a bunch of prima donnas. They have everyone just throwing opportunities at them. They don't live up to their commitments. Half the time you got to go through their, I mean, 90% of the time you got to go through their people, and their people are just sharks. So we did that deal, but that was when I bowed out. Right when we were about to do the contract, I said, I don't want to be involved in this. And the guy, the financial advisor for Tyrone Crawford was like, dude, you're crazy. You're missing a huge opportunity here. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I just, who I have to become to like, to make this successful, I won't do that. I won't jeopardize like who I need to be, the husband I need to be, the father I need to be just to make money and just to like have entrepreneurial success. So there's more on that because we'll talk about that when we get to the Two Conquerors chapter.
Cool.
But that's the net deal is Forrest failed. I made a million, I need billions of mistakes along the way. But ultimately that was something that was an idea that I really did. I suffocated it along the way. I cared too much about it. And that's just something I've seen a million entrepreneurs do. They hold their ideas way too tightly.
Wow. Dude, that's awesome, man. Thank you for sharing that. That was super cool. That's exactly what I was hoping to get from you there. And that was,
I'm like sweating. My palms are sweating as I think through all that. Like, oh man, it was so cool though. Like I talked to the Vaynerchuks, like they called me a few times. Yeah. We had cool calls. I talked to a bunch of Cowboys. It was like, it was really exciting. It was like,
yeah,
oh my gosh, it was. Like I'm working with pro athletes. This is super exciting.
Yeah.
But there was just...
absolutely.
Ah, man, we just had to get out of it. It was like, that world is really nasty. I don't like that world.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, that's good, man. Thank you so much for sharing all that, dude. I'm going to take us right here into question two. And that's, you talk in this chapter about us, quote unquote, being born selfish. And you talk about how we learn to disguise that by being more strategic and political about it as we get older. Because we don't, quote, want our selfishness to be nakedly paraded before others. And dude, I loved this idea. It's so true. For myself, I thought about like, I'm very impatient, right? Like, I don't like to like wait in a line, but like, you don't want people to know you're impatient or you don't want to wait in a line because they're like, oh, this guy's arrogant. Like, this guy doesn't think he should like wait in a line. Like, he's probably like, you know. And so, like, I try to hide it as much as I can. But, like, I have this thing, like, I can't wait in lines. Like, I just can't. I won't, actually.
Dude, I'm the worst at that. If I'm by myself,
I will. And so, but, like, I try to hide it strategically and politically now, like.
So dude, when you see a red light and like, let's say it's late night and you guys are driving and you stop at a red light and no one is on the road, what do you do?
Oh,
do you sit and wait?
Dude, I've run them before.
I run them all the time. I don't run them. I'm not like, oh, F it. I'm not honoring that red light. But if I'm sitting there and it's red and I'm like, no one is benefiting from this transaction right now. I run them. And Danny's you think no rules apply to you, don't you?
Dude,
and I'm like, you'll be
hilarious.
Happy when we're home 4 minutes earlier, okay?
Dude, that's good.
Yeah,
man.
We're so selfish, well, then, bro. So, I mean, most people can't admit that. I'm going to let you like ask the question. Sorry.
No. So that was basically the whole gist. I just wanted you to elaborate on this idea. And I wanted to give like a personal example from myself. It's just like, I don't like to wait in lines, but I disguise it as much. Like if I'm with a group of people, I don't want to just be like, I'm not waiting in that line. Cause then it's like, you're like that guy. Everybody's like, dude, like we want to go in here and you're like, no. So it's like, I try to do things, you know what I mean? To distract myself.
Funny.
So I don't come across as that guy.
I am openly unwilling to wait. So like, I'll go to the front of the line and be like, who's the guy? Who's the guy who runs this show? Right. And it's this girl who's like, hi, welcome to, and I'm like, hey, yeah, where's your boss? Like, I'm that guy. And I try to be nice. I'm not like a royal dick or anything, but there are always untapped efficiencies in those processes. By the way, speaking on lines, we are all, I call it mouse to the cheese. We are all freaking mice to the cheese. You know what we naturally do as humans is we're like, oh, look, there's a line of people over there. That must be the line you have to wait in. And then we just get in line. Dude, at the airport, nice. I have literally seen one line has 35 people in it and the other line has two people in it. And it's not a special line. It's not like the, you know, you got to pay or whatever to be like premier. It is like just another available line. And I'm like, how come nobody is even realizing this? They just get in line and they get on their phone and they drone on Instagram for a while. And I'm like, you are going to miss your flight. Like, get in the other lane, bro. Come on. Anyway,
that's good.
That's like kind of an issue, though. I'm like efficiency obsessed. Like, it's too much.
Oh, yeah. You know, I can see that. I can see that.
But yeah, we're super selfish, man. Anyone who is not willing to admit that is incredibly selfish. They're just too selfish to admit how selfish they are. And I kind of do that a little bit in the chapter. I challenge that a little bit. If you're like, no, I'm not a very selfish person, then you're a freaking idiot. But I think that... Yeah, I think we get really creative about concealing that. I see that at work a lot. I mean, ultimately, people want their projects funded. They want their teams prioritized. They want their things. Mm. Whatever they're working on, whatever they came up with, they want it to be number one. It is what it is. And it's okay to be competitive and to want to get behind your ideas. That's okay. But just be real about it. You don't have to be like, well, this is ultimately better for everyone. Like, no, it's better for you, and that's okay. You know,
dude,
and I just
want to
be real. And so the reason I do that in this chapter is because that dovetails into, like, our selfishness is so in play around our ideas in entrepreneurship as well.
Wow.
And it's so... there's a duality to it. Like, it's like a catch 22, because the second you start clinging to your ideas in entrepreneurship, dude, you need all the help you can get making that thing a reality. So the only way to actually make it successful is to collaborate with others, to share it openly, and to say, hey, there's this mission I really want to go solve. Who's with me? Rather than here's this cool mission I'm going to solve. Like, don't you think I'm cool? And then nobody wants to work with you. Everyone just thinks you're kind of like, you're obsessed with your thing, and you don't make as much progress because you're hoarding it. And nobody wants to work with someone like that. And so it's this, our selfishness is constantly killing us, you know?
Wow. Dude, that's so good, man. You're so right. I mean, like, I've, you know, been in entrepreneurship for a lot of years now, and you see that more than anything. Like, it's rare actually to see guys that have great ideas and they're like, this is an idea that I, you know, that I've been working. Most people are like, here is my idea that I came up with on my own. You know, it's like
they do that. Yeah.
Every sentence declares how the idea is theirs and how it's their, you know, and they can, like, it's their property or whatever. And you're so right. Like, it makes people not only not want to help them, but it pushes people off. And those people never go anywhere, right? Like, they never have success. It's only people that present the ideas to the group as like, hey, this is something I've been thinking about. Like, what do you think about this? Where do you think this could go? Like, where do you see this? What do you see happening with this? And then you start to like talk to 20, 30, 50 people like that. And you start to get more and more like of a glimpse of what it could be. But if you don't, I love that, like what you talked about in this chapter, because if you don't release the idea as just a community, you know, like a part of the group, a part of the entrepreneurial community, like, and you try to make it your own, you kill it. You suffocate it.
I know. And it's so stupid because it's just an idea. Like, it's just anything that's we look around us and we see it's successful. The idea did not make it very special. It was the execution. It was all the work that went into it. I mean, the idea of Amazon is like, I'm sure millions of people have had that idea. It's like, what if there was like a way we could buy this online? And like, there's just kind of one site we go to, and there's lots of different companies that sell their stuff using the site, and the site could just take a cut. Oh, and they could get really good at distribution. Oh, and they could even make it like more expensive if you know, for people who visit the site. and loyalty would That's go good. Up if they paid like $30 a month, and you could call it like Prime or something like that. And yeah. everyone's had that idea, but Amazon
That's good.
Executed it, and it took them 15 years to make one dime on that. They were wow. in the red for like 10, 15 years. I'm probably butchering that, but a long time. And so, man. Dude, if you share your idea with me, I might steal it and use the next 10 years of my life building it. Congratulations, yeah. I stole your idea. Like, is it,
wow.
it's not a big deal at that point.
Dude.
The execution for this forest idea with the athletes and the businesses, the execution yep. was everything. And I talk about in this chapter how I just obsessed over the idea so much, and I promoted the idea so much. I should have spent all the time. And we talk about this in the other chapter, but I should have spent all the time just working on the actual how it's going to work, the execution. Mm.
Wow. That's so good, man. I love that you, too, you brought up about Amazon being in the red for so long. Because I worked for a, you know, this baseball bat company in Baton Rouge called Marucci. And we were like the number one bat in the MLB. But most people don't know that you don't make money selling bats in the MLB. It's like there's not a bit. I mean, the market's so small
because
there's only so many MLB.
Everybody wants to be
players.
The bat. So they're going to charge nothing for the league to
use
it. Right?
And so there's no money being made there. So you eventually have to take your brand and branch out and sell, you know, aluminum bats and gloves and hats and all that stuff.
Oh,
well,
interesting.
The company was quote unquote successful for a long time, but it didn't get into profit until like 15 years, or maybe it was like 12
wow,
to 15 years after its founding, but it was like quote unquote successful. You know what I mean? But it's like,
oh, yeah.
I love that you brought that up about Amazon, because the average person, even many entrepreneurs, don't even see it. Like, they think like, oh, if you get a big idea, you hit it big, and within 3 years you're like, you're swimming in money. It's like,
yeah.
no, that's really
yeah.
not the way a lot of very successful businesses work.
And then a lot of the most successful businesses are things that you and I deal with. You and I deal with every day. Like right now we're looking for a home, and so we're dealing with an agent, and
yeah.
kind of thought about it the yeah. other day. I'm like, there's nothing that he can do it's like wildly different than another agent. He doesn't need to be super creative. He just needs to
good.
Kick ass at what he does.
Yeah.
And so yep. it, again, it's like, that's a domain where it's like 99% execution. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
So,
that's
know,
true.
And he runs a nice business, you know?
That's good. Dude, that's good, man. That's a great concept. That's a good, like, just thought for entrepreneurs and just people in general to have. I'm going to take us into question number four here. So you said in this chapter, quote, what if you could trust the growth of your next idea like you could trust the availability of your next breath? I like love this, and we've been kind of touching on this a little bit, but I want you to just elaborate on like what you meant by that and like the fullness of that idea that you were talking about.
Yeah, like the net of this chapter is the ideas that come into your brain are not owned by you.
Mm.
You should be a conduit, not the king. Like you don't, they didn't
wow.
come from you. You're just a conduit.
That's so
feeding
good.
That information into the world. You're being used.
That's so good.
Yeah. They're not yours. And they evolve. They naturally grow. And so
wow.
and you've got to control that growth to some extent so that you can be responsible with that growth. I can't like
right.
an idea can't evolve so and that's the last chapter we just talked about. It can't start becoming this big, hairy, hard to understand thing. Keep it simple.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like what we get, kind of the whisper we get from something, it's not where'd that come from? Do you think you just like have another track that your brain can run on and you're just getting
yeah.
ideas from there. I mean, yeah, but who created that track? So you got to believe like, you got to believe it's coming from somewhere else. And then you're just a steward of it. You don't have to make it a statue.
Wow.
You don't have to obsess over it. You don't have to squeeze it. You don't have to control it too much. It's just, it's like a very communistic kind of thing. Honestly, it's kind of like, it's
yeah.
not yours. Share it. Share it
yeah.
with the world. And if you're not going to share it, probably not going to get any more ideas coming to you because it's like, what a waste.
Wow.
You know, I've actually seen that in my life. Like when I start hoarding things, I get less. It's weird. It's like this weird concept.
Wow. Dude, that's so good, man. That's so true too. That's like, that's just the way God like set up the earth. And there's all these things, you know, there's all these principles like this guy I listened to. He's like, there's like the person of Jesus. And then there's like the principles of Jesus. And he's like, those are two different things. And there's this idea that like God is this great loving father, but he also has these principles that like he runs the earth by, that he doesn't just bend and break for like certain, because he's this perfect judge, right?
Yeah.
So like he makes us live within these principles. And one of them, you're so right, is like sharing and not trying to commandeer things on the earth, but actually being willing to share them with the world. And that's how people truly gather great success. Like a lot of the greatest evangelists, when you ask them, like, why are you so, they're like, I just cried out to God day and night for a heart to win the lost. And, but their like desire to win the lost, like these like sinners and people that, you know, were living in darkness, is literally the thing that catapulted them to success. But like not them just wanting this success or trying to control this idea of like, I'm an evangelist and like, I have this way, I'm going to do it. But it was like this totally different route, you know, of caring about people.
Yeah, that's so good, man. That's challenging my thought right now for sure. I need to stew on that for a bit.
Yeah, for sure, man. Well, all right, cool, dude. I'm going to close this off there, and I'm going to have you back on for episode 9 shortly, all right?
All right, cool.
All right, awesome, man. And just to remind everyone, this little author mini-series is about Chad's new book, Dying in the Wilderness, Finding Purpose Through Failure. You can get it on Amazon in the hardback, softback, ebook, and the audiobook will be coming soon as well. So thank y'all so much for tuning in. Y'all have a blessed night.
Thanks for listening to the Saddled Stallion podcast. That's it, guys. Be strong, be humble, walk in purposeful manhood.